the question that was drawn this morning, rather interestingly enough, and all I did was reached into the box, but I thought it was interesting since we had Betty's ordination and Betty is Sunday school director. It said, why do people not come to Sunday school? It is important. And so we want to talk about Sunday school and why it's important and how we can kind of rekindle our desires in Sunday school. But before we do that, William has written a song, and he's done it in a variety of places, and I'm going to hold the microphone and William sings it. That way we make sure you're on tape.
I promise everybody here tonight that I ain't going to turn that question in. That's a good question. And this song here, I wrote May 31st, 2010. And oddly enough, it was the day after our union service, May the 30th, down here at the Methodist Church, when they went about 50 people that showed up down there. So, this ain't William's word. The Lord put these words on me here, so if you're going to get mad at anybody, get mad at the Lord tonight. Well, it came Monday morning, Tuesday came without warning. Now it's Wednesday, our church meets tonight. But a worldly life and pleasure can rob us of a treasure. Sometimes we think we're just too tired to be in church. Then a voice said, I've known you forever.
Thank you, William. Made him sing for his coffee tonight. But after the service this morning, and after I read that question out, William was on his way out the door, and he said, you know, wrote this song back in May, and it kind of almost fits. So I said, yep, we're only going to sing one verse of the hymn tonight, and then you can sing for your coffee. But the question had to do with Sunday school and why people come to Sunday school, and because it's important for Sunday school. Anybody tell me when Sunday school started? For some, that's right, Ed. That's right. For some, it started at 10 o'clock. For some, it started at 10:15. For some, it started at 10:35. And for some, it is yet to start. See? It's ESP, extra simple people. Actually, you are correct, Ed, and you win the prize. You can go in there and have another cup of coffee. Of course, if we go all the way back in history, even though it wasn't Sunday school, there was Sabbath school within Judaism and teaching of the children. And as Jesus gave his commission in Matthew 28:19-20, he says, go and teach, you know, baptize and teach, etc. And then in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15, I probably don't even need to read it. I could ask you, what's anybody, 2 Timothy 2:15? Study to show thyself approved to God as a workman who needs not be ashamed, rightly handling or dividing the word of truth. Rightly dividing. I think that's the King James. Or do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a workman who has no need to be ashamed, rightly handling the word of truth. By the way, this is the foundation, the foundational document for Sunday school. The biblical text is the foundational document for Sunday school. But you're right, Ed, it started out for children. Originally, they literally were schools where poor children in the 1700s in Britain, with the Industrial Revolution, where poor children could come to learn. And not just learn about the Bible, but learn to save them from a life of illiteracy. Christian philanthropists wanted to free children from illiteracy and poorer jobs. And so they began Sunday school, since Saturday was part of the regular work week and folks were off on Sunday. They began Sunday school as a way to teach children. And as things developed, since they were already at church and they were wanting to, and this is in England, you've got the Church of England and then the Puritans and others, they were wanting to teach folks about God and about Jesus and about Christianity, it was only a natural thing that they began to teach them about the Bible and teach them to read by reading the Bible. The key promoter of the movement was an English Anglican named Roger Raikes, and he started it in Great Britain, and eventually then it moved to America. Both denominations, Christian denominations, and non-denominational groups, theists and deists and others, saw the importance of teaching children how to be literate, how to read, and the importance of giving them some understanding of God and the Bible. And so that what began on Sundays initially as a way simply to teach children how to read, poorer children how to read, children from families that were illiterate, where the parents were illiterate, eventually, religious education became a core component. And as the churches began to grow, as children began to learn how to read, how to understand things about the Bible, hymn singing comes into vogue as well, putting biblical stories and ideas to music and singing hymn. The spiritual practices then developed, and so then, along with reading the Bible and hymn singing, then they decided, well, it might not be a bad idea to start praying. And so Sunday school then developed within the churches. While we would like to think, bless you, while we would like to think that it developed predominantly and primarily with religious intentions and Christian intentions, it actually didn't. As it developed, the Christian and religious intention became more and more important, became infused into Sunday school. And then Christian virtues, as time went along, Christian virtues being inculcated into the children's lives became more and more important. Later on in the 1870s, both in Britain and in America, compulsory state education became the norm, and reading and writing, and that other R, arithmetic, reading and writing and arithmetic, and other things like that became the purview of the public schools, the state. But the churches then held on to Sunday school as a way to teach the morals, to teach the ethics, and to teach the biblical stories beyond what the children learned during the week, every weekday in school. And so the Sunday school movement then got a boost. And quite frankly, as it developed, the Sunday school movement became a major evangelistic tool. As children then began to learn and began to accept God in Christ, the churches began to grow in number. And as they did that, then parents started being more active in church, etc. So that was kind of, that was a good byproduct of what began as something that was not necessarily religious. And so the Sunday school movement continued to grow. The heyday for Baptists in Sunday school was in the 50s and 60s in this country. From the early 1950s through the late 1960s was a real heyday for Sunday school in Baptist life in the United States. Now, some of it lingered on into the 70s, and as Bo Prosser recently said at a meeting where I was attending, and he's a church specialist, and in particular with Sunday school, he said most Sunday school is run today in 2010 just like it was in between 1950 and 1970. But that whole idea, core idea, then became centered on the Bible. Reading the Bible, having lessons about the Bible, talking about the Bible. Then, like I said, in the 50s, especially the late 50s through the early 70s, that was how you, Sunday school was how you checked off your Christian pilgrimage through the week. Sometimes you came in at 100%, that's what you wanted. Sometimes on that little slip you came in at 80%. I forgot to bring my Bible, forgot to study my lesson. Woe be unto you. You almost needed to go down and kneel down in front of the preacher and the whole congregation if you dropped down to 70%. It did make you accountable. It did make you accountable, or at least have a feeling of that you were accountable. To the other folks around you, you often didn't even think about being accountable to God. You were accountable to that Sunday school teacher, or that you didn't want to do worse than the guy sitting next to you, or the girl sitting next to you in Sunday school class, did you? But even though it might be Saturday night or Sunday morning when you opened that Sunday school quarterly and read through it real quickly, read the Bible passage, tried to remember, you know, on the way to church you start trying to memorize a memory verse for Sunday, at least you could check it off. At least you had done it. Times have changed, very obviously. A lot of folks don't see the necessity of church, much less Sunday school. And yet, it was proven in years past and can still be shown that the best way to close the back door when people come in the front, the best way to close the back door, that is people exiting and not coming back, is actually through Sunday school. Studies have been done for decades now, and they continue even now. That small group experience in Sunday school is the best way to keep people from exiting. Making that connection, making the biblical text the focal point, and then in other discussions about how to live it out, the morals, the ethics, etc., daily life, finding the touch points from the biblical text there and interpreting the biblical text to help in those areas of life. But the Sunday school. Some people these days are saying we need to get rid of Sunday school. I mean, I've heard that in SBC groups, with certain CBF groups, with Methodist colleagues of mine, with Lutheran colleagues of mine, and others, well, we just need to do something other than Sunday school. That's my question. What do we do, and how do we truly get people involved? Now, I know some churches have the little cell groups that meet, accountability groups or cell groups that will meet some other night during the week or some other afternoon during the week away from the church campus. And while that still maintains some connection with some of those folks from the church, it's not making the connection with church. It will be very difficult to find something to take its place. And what's actually happening a lot these days, and really some of the... We in the South tend to lag a little bit behind other parts of the country. Some of those big mega churches, the Saddlebacks and others, are now finding out that what they have been doing for all these years and touting with all these tens of thousands of people coming together on a weekend... last year there was a study that the big Saddleback Community Church, who's the guy that heads that up? Rick Warren. Thank you. They did a study, and then there's another one in somewhere in Chicago that also did a study, and they found the same thing in both of them. 5 to 8 years after someone enters, their spirituality, their spiritual growth, and their understanding of the Bible is no greater. In the majority, in over 65% of them, is no greater than the day they entered. Yes.
We visited and we went to the home group, and it was nice, but no one, there wasn't one person that was that knowledgeable. It felt like everyone was new, so you really didn't get deep into learning.
No depth in learning. And I have talked with some folks who have been part of cell groups at homes, and I've had more than one. I would say probably 75% of the folks that I've talked to in the last 2 years who are part of churches who do predominantly everything. They do a weekend service, no Sunday school, etc., and then they say, well, we meet in cell groups in homes. 75% of the folks I've talked to in the last 2 years who are part of those cell groups, their description of it is, we gather together, you know, everybody brings some food or, you know, snacks or whatever. We gather together. We read some scripture. We have a prayer. Somebody might talk for a few minutes about what they think the scripture means to them. And then we go get refreshments and sit around and talk about what our kids are doing in school, what they're doing out on the sports field, and that kind of stuff. Okay, that's what... Okay. That was your experience. Right. Yeah, if you stop, that's a real question. That's a real question. If you stop Sunday school, and I'm not suggesting we do. I'm against stopping Sunday school. But some of the folks that I listen to, you know, if you stop the Sunday school, then the young folks don't come, and then other folks don't come. But I've heard some folks say, well, we just need to stop Sunday school. And my question, Ed, like you, has been, okay, then what are we going to replace it with? We're not. And the back door is going to be opened wider and wider. Well, but I'm not belittling just reading the Bible, some verse out of the Bible, and praying, but because I think that's important. But at the same time, there's got to be something more than just simply reading it and letting it go.
Yeah. Several years ago, our church had one men's class, and I understand it's pretty close to 200 men in that class.
Man.
Of course, right now, most of them are in Rose Hill or Creamer Memorial Gardens, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen pictures of those Sunday school classes. I believe God was working in some of that. I also know that the mill was working in some of that too, because I've heard anecdotal stories from some folks. Dick Couch is one in particular that used to talk about. Yeah, he went to the Baptist church because that's where his overseer was a member, and you wanted to go to the church where your overseer was and your colleagues around you, so that they'd see you in church on Sunday. You'd be there with them in church on Sunday, and they wouldn't come around on Monday and say, "Well, I didn't see you in church. Were you in church Sunday? What were you doing Sunday instead of being in church?" Yeah, there were people who went to Presbyterian, and I have had folks tell me they went to the Methodist for the same reason as well. So I understand that, but why don't people come to Sunday school? That's a real good question. We've gotten to where our life, as William said, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, even Sundays. We've gotten so much going on that we just kind of, okay, what's the first thing to shuck? We got Sunday school. I don't know about y'all, but when I was growing up, opening assembly of Sunday school was at 9:15. And Sunday school started at 9:30. And you were there. You didn't have a choice. My dad was a deacon, and we went on vacations with the preacher and his family. You had to be running a fever, a significant fever in my house, to be eligible to stay home from school or Sunday school or preaching. We're talking 100, generally around 102 or better. For school, I promise you, I never did this for church, but there were a few times for school when I didn't particularly want to go, and they'd bring the thermometer, and if my mom walked out, you could take that thing. And you had the blanket that had the little satiny kind of material at the end. If you take that thermometer out and you rub between your fingers in that satin material real quick for about 30 seconds, and then look at it and then shake it down and then stick it back in your mouth. I had never, until I was an adult, actually until I moved to South Carolina, I had never tasted castor oil. Now, I tasted something that, in my opinion, is just as bad. I go camp with my grandparents, and my grandmother Zachary believed that you had to drink an 8-ounce glass of prune juice every morning at breakfast. And we'd be sitting out there at the camp table, and my cousin and I'd be there, and Ellen would be making faces and drinking hers, and I'd lift mine up and look. As soon as Zach turned her head around, I'd dump some of it under the table and hold it like this, and she turned back around. I'd dump the rest of it and then sit the thing down, and she's, "Ellen, you need to drink." I didn't let Ellen see me do it. "You need to drink your prune juice. Steve's drinking all of his." But what are some of the reasons that people don't come? Some of the studies suggest some of the problems with Sunday school that keep people out, other than the fact that we just don't get up, stay up late at night or whatever, and it's not a priority for a lot of folks, is terminology. Yes, Ed? In the 50s and early 60s, church was a focal point.
Yeah. We talked about training unions, just about the Sunday school complement of the union. We had two teams, one side would take a program 1 week,
right.
One the next.
Yeah, church training, or training union as it was when I came up, that's where you actually learned about church polity. Yeah. You were, or what we call discipleship. You learned about how the church functioned. You learned about basic doctrines of the church, ethics, norms, that kind of stuff. Yes, you did learn how to speak there.
It was a good training ground, but the diminishing kind of thing started with when we joined here in the early 70s. I remember we came to training and we had it the first couple of years, and I remember we were straight upstairs where our training school classes. Now, Linda and I came in one night, and Charlie Cook was there.
Yeah, training union?
Training
in the 70s, yeah. Yeah.
Those that were there actually had a post, and you really didn't have any one
Well, and actually, Ed, probably my experience is in the 70s, mid-70s to early 80s is when training union or church training really started nosediving. People started doing other things.
I think that's a carryover in the Sunday school.
Well, I think you do have some of that going on. Some of the things is the terminology we use. You know, we talk church with church words that new folks that come in don't understand, oftentimes without explaining what those church words mean. We use that terminology and we don't explain it. Well, we're one of the few in the area that still holds services in the evening. But yeah. And once again, that's in part because people don't want to come in from the lake during the summer, or you got the favorite football teams playing the game on Sunday afternoon, and
well,
yeah.
That's the problem with too many toys nowadays.
Yeah.
You don't have that many toys and that many activities, computers, 5 million toys in the
toys. Right. Yeah. It is a matter of priority and so much going on. Some people come and visit Sunday school class and in different churches and they feel it's cliquish because, you know, yeah, stores are open all the time. Yeah. Well, and, yeah, with church training, we would do the same thing on Maxie. On Sunday nights, we'd have training union, then there would be worship service, and after worship service, we'd go either out to eat or go to somebody's house. You know, the youth, the young folks, the parents, that kind of thing. And, you know, and.
Well,
yeah, GAs and RAs. Yeah, and that is something, you know, with, and once again, going back to children and the training up of children and the training up of young folks, it's, yeah, we don't talk that much about missions with young folks anymore. I know a few years ago I went up on a Wednesday night to talk about Lottie Moon and Annie Armstrong, and kids looked at me like I was crazy. We used to have Bible drills and memorize scripture and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and woe be unto you if you stood up in front, if you got called on, you stood up in front of the group and you couldn't say the memory verse.
That is, I think, the downside of so many different translations. Because
we always use King James.
Everybody
had a King James Bible. Everybody did that, yeah. Also, sometimes folks come in and I saw this happen in a worship service. I've told you all about it, but Bo Prosser was talking about a church he was doing a study for when he went in doing a consult, and nobody knew who he was in the Sunday school class, and he walked in. He walked into Sunday school class for his age group, which is not that much younger than me, walked in, and he sat down in this chair. And somebody said, turned around and said, oh, you need to move somewhere else because that's where so-and-so sits every Sunday. And if they come, they'll let you know.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah. You know, you get those kinds of things. And one of the other leading reasons that people stop coming to Sunday school is that the product that we often put out is not worth their time. Reading a book, Outside the Walls, which talks about why people don't come to church and what keeps them away and what could bring them back. And they did it. They talked with a bunch of folks, and especially folks that had children, said, well, you know, we've got kids doing piano and dance and orchestra, and we have this play production and that play production, and so, and you know, we just don't have time to go someplace where what we get is mediocre. This is a direct quote from him. What we get is mediocre. If given the choice of what we have experienced in Sunday school and church when we have attended the particular church they were in, and this was somewhere in the Midwest, and going to a play production or going to, I forget the name of the place, but it's equivalent to Peace Center, said, we'll take our children there every time because of the quality of what's presented. They are. But what it says is we need to make sure that what we do each week we're prepared for in the very best we can. As I mentioned before, some weeks back, Bo Prosser's mantra is people go where they know they've been prepared for and will be cared for. They come into our Sunday schools and there's obviously little or no preparation, they're not going to give it much of a shot. People go where they know they've been prepared for and will be cared for. And the suggestions are that we at least 50% of the time be spent in Bible study and the other part of the time in community building, discipleship in Sunday school, because people want and need community. I mean, we've got so much out there that we can do. People are getting lost in the shuffle of what's going on in everyday life. And the old joke of, well, you know, Sunday's my only day to sleep. Well, it's not just the only day to sleep. It's my only day to do this, to catch on that, etc. They need to do some things, but we need to try and foster the idea of community. All we should do, or all we do, should foster a sense of community based around Bible study. Jesus started out with what? A small group. A group to which he talked, T-A-U-G-H-T. A group in which there was discussion. You know, they didn't always agree with Jesus. They asked questions. They argued among themselves, and Jesus taught them about how they should be. And Simon Peter even said, oh, you can't do this. We're not going to let you do that. So part of fostering community is to give people a place where they can study, they can learn, but they can also feel safe that when they've got questions, those questions will not be treated as if they're crazy. Where they feel like they can build some community and be seen as folks. Ask you a question. When, you know, and this is something else, and I've thought about it, and we've still got a bunch of them to use up, but I thought about, and you may or may not have noticed that I use the word guests on Sunday mornings, not visitors, even though our cards say visitors. If we're going to foster community and keep people around in Sunday school, worship, and other things, well, let me ask you this. When you have people you regularly hang out with come and they eat supper with you and hang out for 3 or 4 hours some night and watch a movie or watch TV or hang out with you and your kids, do you say to your children, oh, we're having visitors tonight? Having company. Company still has a sense of fellowship and connectedness. We're having friends. And it's like home folks. I mean, when Sarah and Hazel get together, Hazel doesn't say, well, Sarah, come on over. I'm having visitors. You can be part of it. Well, she might, but I'm trying to illustrate, make a point here. You know, it's visitors versus family or home folks, making people feel welcome. And not just when church service is over or right before it, but it's visitor versus guest, visitor versus home folk. In fact, a number of churches, I've talked to some folks recently, and Mike McCullough said, and he's been a professional educator, Christian educator in the church with an emphasis on Sunday school for 28 years, and he said, if you're one of the folks that teaches in our Sunday school or that greets, that's another thing. They said, if you're going to have new folks around, you need to have greeters around to show them places, but a greeter should never be inside the door. even if it's a glass door, because that's a barrier between you and them, and you're saying, oh, you're outside, we're inside. But he said, if one of my teachers or one of my greeters uses the word visitor to refer to anybody, he said, after the service, we have a discussion. Because what does visitor do? That says, oh, well, you're just passing through. You're just passing through. We should, as a church and as a Sunday school, exist more for the new people who haven't been reached than we should for ourselves. Now, that doesn't mean we push ourselves to the side. We have to take care of ourselves. But when we have folks come, and maybe they've come for a long time and they've never really been a part of us, but they're there, we should seek to meet their needs even before we meet our own needs. Yes, Melissa.
Right. I know we don't have it on Sunday mornings, two Sunday school teachers for the children from kindergarten and sixth grade who want to go up to you.
We're about to have more than that.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have...
We have to have
the dedicated teachers that when these people bring, you know, their children...
Right.
To church, and there's no teachers for them. I mean, what does that say, people?
Well, and it does. It says that about the children. It also says that about whether it's our adult Sunday school classes, our youth class, or the children's classes. If we're not prepared, if we don't have the folks there, then that says it's not important. And the image, whether we believe it or not, the image that we project to other folks is this is something to check off on that list of weekly things to do. I don't think that's what it means for most folks here. But that's the impression that we could give. Not saying that we do, but that we could give. I know that we're working on that more. But part of that, too, is having the children in those age groups. We haven't had some of those children. That's why that's fallen by the wayside. We're starting to pick up more that are moving up. And so folks are stepping up and saying, yes, I'll teach Sunday school, etc. But, you know, and we are in a transition time and a transition zone. Majority of the children come here on Wednesday nights. We don't see on Sundays. Parents don't come. Chris and Robert and Jim and you and Debbie and others try to make some of those inroads with parents when they're here or when you see them out there when you're picking up the children or dropping them off. But you also know that there's some that don't even come out and meet the bus. Do they? But I think if the children can get excited, or the young folks can get excited, or you got a young couple that comes into your Sunday school class and they feel like people really care. It's not we're going to overwhelm the new guys, and then as soon as we tell them we're glad they're here, we turn around and go over here in the corner. But we really nurture that. I think that's part of it. But that's another thing too. If we one of the other things is I can go see folks. And I say, oh, you're the preacher. You're expected to do that. You're paid to do that. And folks, y'all's age, Miranda, the Dixons, Melissa, Paige, Lisa, and certainly folks, Casey and Shane, who are in between you and some of the others. I'm old enough to be the daddy. Robert's old enough to be the daddy. Al's old enough to be the daddy. Even William's old enough to be the daddy. And while it's nice to have those, to know that you've got that foundation back there behind it, you've got some history, they'd much rather have you all invite them to come to things. Because you're closer to their ages. They relate more there. Of course, if we do that, then we need to be here too. It's like if I invite somebody my age, I need to make sure I'm here as much as possible because who knows? But the Wednesday night group has built up predominantly through children and young people inviting and then having the folks who pick them up and who take them home and who do all kinds of things with them here, including put Band-Aids. Or maybe even sometimes they need to do like I used to do our oldest son, his best friend Shane. They learned very intimately the interweaving of the different corners of the fence in the backyard. They'd be playing, okay, Shane, in that corner. Stephen, in that corner. David, you got to go to that corner. And then they went there because they got to fighting. But at least even that shows that you care about them instead of letting them be wild onions and just run everywhere. So why do people not come to Sunday school? There are a wide range of reasons. How do we solve that? It takes not just the church staff or just the Sunday school teachers. It takes all of us. It takes the entire community to build that that relationship. It takes the entire community to raise those children and sometimes their parents. It takes commitment from you and me and, I mean, each one of us, individually as well as together. And I know there are a lot of you that do extra, and you go beyond to help folks get here, to feel welcome, to do things for folks, even things out in the community. Sometimes that cold cup of water or that pie that you took to somebody just because you wanted to and they needed something, that may be the one spark that gets them to say, well, you know, they really care. But then when that spark starts, I'm not going to break in to pass it on. When you get that one spark, then it has to have something else there, some excitement, something that'll catch and then grow. We're open to all kinds of ideas. I've got some other ideas I want to talk with Betty about. But at the bottom line, it needs to be about service, S-E-R-V-I-C-E, not serve us. And that's not mispronouncing service. That's S-E-R-V-U-S. And when we do that, and really do it with a caring attitude, people will find that connection, that interconnectedness that we can have. But without Sunday school and this being foundational, the study of the biblical text being foundational for Sunday school, it's just another gathering. It's just another gathering. And it'll continue to go by the wayside. I guess the challenge for each one of us and for us all is to make our commitment to learn as much as we can ourselves, to share it with others, and to welcome them. Welcome them every time we see them. Invite them. Maybe even bring them. And if we're somewhat on time, we somewhat have that interest and that fire and that spark, then maybe. A lot of the big churches, one of the knocks on, as I said earlier, and I got kind of sidetracked in my head, Saddleback and some of these others, found that after 5 years, 65 to 70% of those folks who had entered had moved no further in their spiritual growth or their understanding of the Bible than they were the day they entered. A lot of reasons for that, but I think we can take from that that if we're really serious about it ourselves, we can help not only us move, but others get interested and move as well. I wish I had a magic bullet. I don't. And I've talked to colleagues in all kinds of denominations, and their Sunday schools are on the decline. And they try all kinds of things, including gimmicks of giving out, well, it used to be comic books, but now you take the bus out, and the kids get on the bus, and they know they're going to get a prize. I know of one group they take around their bus, and they promise them silly bands. A bag of silly bands if they'll come. And while they get them to church, the question is how many of them are coming just for the silly bands? It's 6:49. Yes, I'm over again. But we're open to ideas for Sunday school and how to build it and how to keep people interested, but most of all, how to grow ourselves so that we may help others to grow as well. God bless you. Go in peace. And I hope to see you on Wednesdays and Sundays. Amen.